To be smart is not enough. In today's world, information is everywhere, floating, screaming, piling on from every direction. A quick search gives you facts, figures, answers. But wisdom, that elusive quality of knowing when to act, when to wait, what to say, and what to remain silent about, is rare. Very rare. The Stoics were never obsessed with being smart in the academic or superficial sense. They didn't care how many degrees a man had, how many theories he could cite, or how many people he could out-talk. What mattered was something deeper, something grounded. The wisdom to see the world clearly and the strength to respond to it with integrity and calm. To become dangerously smart is to move beyond intellectual vanity and into the realm of perceptive mastery. It is not about rattling off facts like a trivia machine. It's about wielding insight like a blade, cutting through noise, emotion, distraction, and manipulation. It is about psychological fortification, a mind that can't be baited, emotions that don't collapse under stress, a spirit that remains immovable even in the storm. It's about walking into a room and sensing tension before a word is spoken. It's about spotting lies in the flicker of an eye and navigating complexity with the calm of someone who has studied chaos. A dangerously smart person sees patterns others miss. They read people with precision. They master their own impulses. They collect knowledge not to flaunt, but to refine their judgment. They're the kind of person who doesn't just survive hard times, they make hard times nervous. Their wisdom is a quiet weapon, always present, always sharpened. They do not broadcast their power, but everyone around them feels it. The Stoics laid the foundation for this type of dangerous intelligence. They taught self-awareness as the gateway to wisdom. They championed the discipline of desire, the restraint of emotion, and the power of deliberate action. They encouraged broad learning, not just in philosophy, but in all disciplines, science, ethics, art, politics, war, rhetoric, because they knew life demands versatility. They didn't prepare for one kind of battle, they prepared for all of them. So to walk the Stoic path toward becoming dangerously smart is to train your entire being, your intellect, your speech, your emotions, your instincts. It is to never stop learning, never stop observing, and never let your internal world be ruled by anything outside of your control. This is not a mindset of arrogance, it is a mindset of relentless preparation, a mindset of alertness. It is the sharpening of a weapon that cannot be seen, but is always felt. And it is the first, most important step to becoming dangerously smart. Let's begin. Chapter 1. Build the inner citadel. The Stoics called it the inner citadel, that fortified mental stronghold that no insult, no lie, no defeat, and no praise could penetrate. It was their metaphor for a soul so disciplined, so inwardly complete, that no external chaos could disturb its peace. It was not a place of escape, but a position of unshakable control. This citadel is not built overnight. It is constructed brick by brick, each brick laid with an act of emotional clarity, mental discipline, and philosophical reflection. To build the inner citadel is to recognize where true intelligence begins, the ability to filter thought, to master emotion, and to choose response over reaction. Every time you pause before speaking, every time you breathe before reacting, every time you ask yourself, "Is this within my control?" you are sharpening the blade of your mind. You are creating a buffer between stimulus and reaction, and in that space of awareness, real power begins to take root. Power not over others, but over the only territory you ever truly command, your own soul. This mastery does not mean emotional coldness. Emotional discipline is often mistaken for suppression or detachment. But the Stoics didn't advocate pretending you feel nothing. They advocated becoming aware of the feeling without being owned by it. Awareness gives you the leverage. When you name a feeling, when you recognize it for what it is, a flash of anger, a twinge of envy, a stab of insecurity, you rob it of its ability to hijack your reason. Emotional awareness is intelligence. Emotional control is dangerous intelligence, the kind that allows you to move through fire without catching flame. This strength radiates outward. When you are in control of your internal world, your perception of the external becomes far more accurate. You stop projecting your insecurities onto others. You stop reacting to shadows and start seeing substance. You begin to watch instead of assume. You don't just see people's faces. You see their tells, their micro-reactions, the flicker in their eyes when they lie, the subtle defensiveness in their posture when they feel exposed. You pick up on what is unsaid because your mind is no longer clouded with emotional noise or reactive storytelling. You listen without waiting to speak, without rehearsing your reply while the other person is still talking. You listen with your entire presence, tuned in not just to the content, but to the subtext. You become hard to read, an enigma to those who thrive on predictability, but you become quick to read others because you've trained yourself to see beyond surface behavior. You understand motive, insecurity, manipulation, not in order to exploit others, but to remain free of being exploited. This is not about deception, it is about presence. It's about becoming so anchored in your own awareness that nothing can pull you off center. Even when chaos swirls around you, your footing is firm. This centeredness creates power. You're no longer ruled by ego, nor baited by drama. You no longer find your self-worth entangled in how others perceive you. You're not seduced by validation or flustered by rejection. You see compliments and criticisms alike as fleeting weather patterns across the mind, interesting but not defining. You begin to live by internal standards rather than external applause, guided by a compass rooted deep in principle, not popularity. That is what makes you formidable. That is what makes your presence undeniable. You develop a sense of composure that turns heads, not because you seek attention, but because people are magnetized by stability. You walk with ease because your mind is not at war with itself. You no longer need to prove anything to anyone because your sense of value is no longer a negotiation. You speak when necessary, act with intent, and keep your power closely held, not out of secrecy, but out of sovereignty. Your restraint becomes a form of elegance. You walk into a room without the need to impress, yet people are drawn to you. They watch how you observe before speaking. They feel the gravity of your stillness. They recognize something unshakable in you, even if they can't name it. They sense they're in the presence of someone who has done the deep work, the kind that most avoid. Why? Because true presence is rare. In a world addicted to noise and distraction, to be grounded is to be extraordinary. In a culture of performative intellect, depth is a rarity. Clarity is magnetic because it brings direction where there is fog. The one who sees through illusion, through pretense, becomes a guide. That kind of clarity isn't loud, it doesn't boast, it simply is. Calmness in a world of frantic noise is strength. It is not passivity. It is latent power, waiting, watching, weighing the moment. That calm becomes contagious. It becomes a refuge for those around you. People come to you not just for answers, but for presence, for perspective, for the calm in your voice when the world shakes around them. They trust your presence because it doesn't bend to chaos, because your steadiness suggests a mind trained to endure. Your presence becomes a silent teacher, not through grand declarations, but through small, consistent signals. How you listen, how you breathe, how you carry silence. In a world that screams for attention, your stillness speaks volumes. You are the eye of the storm, the fire that doesn't flicker, the unmoved mover. This is the first and most foundational element of dangerous intelligence, mastery of the self, cultivated in silence when no one is watching, forged in long hours of thought, built through relentless trials of restraint, sharpened by solitude, and tested in moments when others lose control. It is revealed not in how loud you are, but in how immovable you remain, how your silence can speak louder than another's shouts, how your stillness can calm a storm, and how your refusal to be reactive becomes a declaration of inner power. This is the edge few possess. This is the presence that shapes the room without raising its voice. It is the silent signal of a mind that has studied itself and emerged not just intact, but indestructible. Begin each day by journaling your thoughts. Identify what emotions dominate your mind and why. Practice responding to challenges with a pause. Develop that pause into a habit. Over time, your reactions will no longer own you. Chapter 2. Train your mind like a warrior. A dangerously smart person is not passive in their education. They are aggressive in learning. They don't wait for knowledge to come to them. They seek it out like a predator tracking a vital resource. They see every subject, every story, every conversation as a potential gem of understanding. Whether it's a novel, a news headline, a historical event, or a technical manual, it becomes fuel for the mind. Even mundane experiences become exercises in understanding. They analyze behavior at the grocery store. They interpret emotional patterns during arguments. They notice shifts in tone, intention, and attention. Every experience becomes raw data for their evolving wisdom. They do not view learning as a phase of life, but as a lifestyle. Their curiosity is relentless. They are equally fascinated by philosophy and physics, by the workings of the mind and the mechanics of machines. Every moment becomes an opportunity to sharpen perception and deepen thought. They treat their attention as sacred, choosing what they consume with precision. Their mind is not cluttered by meaningless noise, but refined by intentional thought. Seneca wrote, "We suffer more in imagination than in reality." This quote reveals the importance of rational thinking. The mind must be trained to spot flawed logic, not only in the words of others, but in the narratives we tell ourselves. A dangerously smart person doesn't let their imagination run wild with fear, assumptions, or irrational guilt. They don't surrender to emotions without interrogation. They challenge their own beliefs as ruthlessly as they challenge the world's. They question their own motivations. They seek not to confirm, but to clarify. They don't fear being wrong, they fear staying wrong. Just as a warrior trains for battle daily, sharpening his sword and refining his form, we must train for intellectual conflict. Not to win arguments for pride's sake, but to stand unmoved when deception, confusion, or manipulation enters the room. The goal is not to dominate, but to discern. Not to overpower, but to remain unshaken. Not to seek debate, but to be unshaken in one if it finds us. Study logic, study rhetoric. Learn not only how to argue, but how to think clearly. Understand the roots of persuasion. Dive into how people are swayed by language, emotion, rhythm, repetition, fear. Look deeper than just techniques. Understand the psychology beneath them. Know how fear is used to create urgency. Know how repetition manufactures belief. Know how vague language is used to obscure intent. Know how people use emotionally charged metaphors to bypass reason and lodge directly into your subconscious mind. Learn to recognize these tactics in conversation, in media, in institutions. See them in advertising, hear them in political speeches, read them between the lines of contracts. Study propaganda, study advertising, study ancient oratory, study courtroom arguments, study cult recruitment tactics. Dissect the speeches of statesmen and tyrants alike. Examine how a simple phrase, timed correctly, can shift the beliefs of a crowd. Language is not just a tool, it is an operating system for the mind. Be the person who hears a fallacy and exposes it with elegance. Don't just point it out, unfold it, unravel it, so others can see its weakness. Learn to decode manipulation without moral panic. Be the one who, when lies are spoken, truth is calmly returned, not with anger, but with clarity that silences. You don't attack, your insight reveals. You don't overpower, you illuminate. You don't humiliate, you awaken. And that revelation is enough to change the temperature of a room. People pause, people reflect, not because you shouted, but because your words carried the weight of discernment. Because you made complexity simple, because your words forced others to confront the truth they were avoiding. This is not about humiliating others. It is about defending your peace. It is about establishing intellectual boundaries that few dare to cross. It's about becoming the guardian of your own clarity, the steward of your own logic. It's about knowing the weight of your words and how to wield them responsibly. Because every word is a ripple and every sentence a current, your intelligence becomes a shield, not a sword, unless provoked, and then it becomes both. A sword forged not from hostility, but from sharpness. A blade of thought that cuts through confusion, not flesh. When you understand language, when you understand manipulation, when you recognize the tactics of confusion or deception, you develop a kind of immunity. You are no longer prey to persuasion cloaked in sophistication. You are no longer tricked by appearances or caught off guard by sugar-coated deception. It becomes difficult to mislead you, difficult to provoke you, difficult to bait you into the games of lesser minds. You see the bait for what it is before it's even cast. You can sense manipulation not just in what is said, but in what is left unsaid. You can read the silent agendas behind smiles, the desperation behind insults, the insecurity behind false confidence. Your intellect is not reactionary, it's reflective. You evaluate, pause, and respond with precision that makes others cautious about engaging in mental warfare with you. The clarity of your mind builds a natural barrier, a fortress of discernment that weakens the strategies of those who thrive on confusion. You become the mind no one wants to underestimate. You become the presence no one can predict. The quiet voice in the room that others defer to without command. Your opinion, when shared, has gravity, because it is always backed by thought, experience, and restraint. The one whose silence makes others question their own certainty. They look to you not because you demand their attention, but because your very being commands it. That immunity makes you a dangerous presence to those who depend on ignorance to survive, because you are the light that reveals shadows, the signal that cuts through noise, the calm observer who sees everything and says only what must be said. You are the mirror that reflects distortion back to the source, stripping illusion of its disguise and leaving only truth. You become the worst kind of opponent for the dishonest. The one they cannot rattle, cannot distract, and cannot deceive. They dread your awareness because it holds them accountable. They fear your words because they expose falsehood. They retreat not because you attack, but because you simply see. Not because you shout, but because your clarity blinds deception. Not because you know everything, but because you've made your mind unshakable. You don't rush to conclusions, nor cling to assumptions. You allow truth to reveal itself through steady observation. Not because you win every debate, but because your thinking is too fluid to be trapped and too grounded to be moved. You question everything, including yourself, and that makes you immune to intellectual traps. You are not just intelligent, you are untouchable in the realm where most crumble, the mind. And in that invincibility, you are not feared because you destroy others. You are feared because you cannot be destroyed. Study one logical fallacy each week. Memorize it. Spot it in conversations, online debates, news reports. Keep a journal of how often flawed reasoning shows up around you. Slowly, you will become the person who others cannot confuse. Chapter 3: The Art of Listening and Silent Observation. The person who talks the most rarely learns the most. Epictetus reminded us, we have two ears and one mouth so that we can listen twice as much as we speak. Listening is not a passive act, it is an active form of intelligence. The person who listens learns not just what is said, but what is implied. They begin to detect what others try to hide, what others fear to say, and even what others don't yet realize about themselves. Listening becomes a form of quiet interrogation, not to attack, but to understand. To become dangerously smart, you must become a master observer. Observation isn't limited to words. It's the art of reading the invisible, of perceiving what most miss because they are too eager to speak, too anxious to be heard. Watch people's behavior with the attention of a craftsman examining the details of a masterpiece. Notice not just what they say, but how they say it. What words do they repeat? What words do they avoid? Observe their posture. Is it upright or slouched? Open or defensive? Their tone. Does it harden when they lie? Soften when they feel guilt? Rise when they are uncertain? Their eyes when they speak? Do they search the room or meet yours with confidence? Most people leak their truth through the cracks of their speech. Their gestures betray their comfort level. Their pacing reveals their emotional state. Their breathing patterns, their fidgeting, their unconscious movements, all are signals. Their pauses often speak louder than their words. A long silence after a direct question can be more telling than a long answer. But only the disciplined can catch those leaks. Only those who have trained themselves to listen with the whole body, with eyes, ears, and intuition, can gather the real information behind the spoken dialogue. This type of perception doesn't come from textbooks. It comes from stillness, from mindfulness, from choosing to enter every interaction, not as a performer, but as a student. To be dangerous in conversation is not to dominate the room with noise. It is to dominate with presence, with insight, with the stillness that listens fully and the clarity that replies carefully. The truly dangerous speaker is not the one who talks over others. It's the one who speaks after understanding everything. The person who watches quietly, who reads the room before speaking, becomes the person everyone turns to when the conversation breaks down. They do not impose, they reveal. Listening reveals patterns, not just verbal patterns, but emotional and psychological rhythms. It shows where people are coming from and where they're going. It reveals values, what a person fears, what they admire, what they avoid. It reveals the root of confusion, the misunderstandings buried beneath pride, insecurity, or haste. Most conflict is not disagreement, it is misinterpretation. The skilled listener resolves what others escalate. And when you speak after listening, your words carry the weight of truth. They do not add to the noise, they cut through it like a well-honed blade slicing through fabric. They're not cluttered with hesitation or pride. They're not spoken to prove your worth, they are spoken because they are needed. They don't come from insecurity, they come from discernment. Your silence beforehand gives your words credibility. It gives people the chance to feel your presence before they ever hear your voice. People can feel the gravity behind them. They sense that your speech is not a reaction, but a revelation. You do not speak just to be heard. You speak to bring light. Your words are not impulsive. They are not emotional flares. They are distilled, grounded, and potent, purified by patience and discipline. They echo wisdom, not insecurity. They reflect not just what you know, but who you are. They are shaped by clarity, not ego. Because you are not trying to win the moment, you are aiming to bring clarity to it. Your words are not thrown like darts. They are placed like stones in a foundation, measured, intentional, anchored. People lean in when you speak, not because you are loud, but because you have earned attention through your restraint. You carry silence like armor, and your speech like a sword you never need to unsheathe unless absolutely necessary. Because when you speak, you break tension instead of feeding it. You clarify confusion instead of adding to it. Because you speak from understanding, not from impulse. From deliberate insight, not frantic reaction. From purpose, not ego. And in a world saturated with noise, that difference is thunderous. That difference separates the wise from the merely informed. This is the foundation of conversational dominance, not volume, but value. Not interruption, but precision. Not aggression, but awareness refined into insight. You become the person others pause for, the one whose perspective shifts the dynamic of the room. The most respected person in the room isn't the one who talks the most, but the one who makes their words count, the one whose sentences carry the weight of contemplation, the one who changes minds not with pressure, but with presence, the one whose words feel like clarity, like direction, like stability. It is better to speak one sentence that clarifies a room than a thousand that fill it with fog. Because in that one sentence lies the dangerous intelligence that doesn't shout to be heard, but is always heard when it speaks. It is the kind of speech that cannot be ignored because it is born of substance, silence, and strength. In your next conversation, speak less than the other person. Let your primary role become that of the observer. Instead of mentally composing your response while they're still talking, immerse yourself in the listening. Focus entirely on understanding not just their words, but their energy, their emphasis, their hesitations. Watch their gestures with curiosity. Are their hands restless when a certain topic arises? Do their shoulders tense when discussing a name? These small tells are windows into the unspoken. Note what triggers them. Pay attention to their breathing, their volume shifts, the phrases they return to repeatedly. Ask yourself, what matters most to them in this moment? What are they protecting, avoiding, or yearning for? Train yourself to read the story behind their words. Read their body language like a second script running beneath the verbal one. Pick up on emotional undertones, guilt, pride, uncertainty, envy, and let those notes inform your interpretation. When you reply, let your response reflect not just comprehension, but recognition. Reply with precision, not just to what was said, but to what was meant. Let your words feel like they see deeper. This is how trust is earned in silence and respect is built through speech. In a world obsessed with talking, choose to master the art of hearing and the skill of speaking only when it adds clarity, not clutter. Chapter 4. Read, learn, absorb everything. The Stoics devoured philosophy, but they also studied law, nature, politics, and history. They were not one-dimensional. Their pursuit of knowledge was not compartmentalized. They believed that wisdom came from recognizing the interwoven patterns of life, that a principle learned in physics could echo through ethics, that a lesson from history could inform leadership, that the patterns of nature could mirror the workings of the human mind. They understood that all knowledge is connected, and that the wise person finds value in every subject. To be dangerously smart, you must become the kind of person who never stops learning, not out of obligation, but from genuine curiosity. Curiosity that burns through indifference. Curiosity that transforms every experience into a question, every conversation into a study, every failure into data. Read widely and curiously. Feed your intellect with a diversity of material. Study both the ancient and the modern, the technical and the abstract, the common and the obscure. Dive into science, not just for its facts, but for its discipline in inquiry, for the way it teaches you to think with precision and skepticism. Learn strategy, not just in games or war, but in decision-making, in leadership, in the art of navigating pressure with composure. Study psychology, not to manipulate others, but to understand the subtle mechanics of the human soul, to see motives, patterns, fears, and hopes. Study religion and myth to grasp the symbolic and moral frameworks that shape entire civilizations. The symbols we inherit influence the choices we make. Learn mechanics, medicine, and math so your thinking becomes both grounded and adaptable. Learn how the world works on every level, from the molecular to the societal. Build a library in your mind that spans disciplines. Become the type of person who can speak with an engineer and a poet in the same afternoon and hold both conversations with reverence and clarity. Expose yourself to complexity. Don't run from the subjects that intimidate you. Those are the ones that will stretch your mind. Dive into economics, geography, digital technologies, and literature. Understand how software is written, how supply chains function, how human migration reshapes cultures. Study music theory to see structure in emotion. Study architecture to understand the discipline behind beauty. Study astronomy to remember your place in the universe. Read poetry and code, metaphors and formulas, myth and mechanism. Let yourself be humbled by what you don't know, and let that humility drive your learning forward. Never let your mind grow stale. Let it breathe. Let it expand. The dangerously smart individual is a walking encyclopedia of hard-earned understanding, whose mind holds blueprints for both philosophical contemplation and practical execution. They are not trapped in one way of thinking. They shift paradigms. They don't recite facts. They construct frameworks. They don't fear complexity. They embrace it. Their knowledge is not ornamental. It is functional. It is strategic. It is dangerous not because it dominates, but because it liberates. Why? Because knowledge is preparation. It is insulation against chaos, armor against manipulation, and structure within uncertainty. When life throws you chaos, your knowledge will shape your response. You will not default to fear. You will reach for frameworks. You won't panic. You will process. You won't freeze. You will analyze. You won't break. You'll reorient. Knowledge provides agility. It gives you options. It helps you see paths others overlook. It transforms obstacles into puzzles and crisis into opportunity. When someone tries to deceive you, your knowledge will dismantle their attempt, not with confrontation, but with quiet dismantling. You will see the structure behind their argument and take it apart without raising your voice, disarming confusion with clarity. When someone seeks your guidance, your library of insight will offer it, tailored, relevant, and timely. Not generalized wisdom, but specific precision. You will become a source of calm clarity when the world is loud and confused. You'll offer direction in the fog. Others will turn to you not just for answers, but for perspective, for orientation, for a sense of what matters. The Stoic approach to knowledge was humble. They saw themselves as students of life, not masters of it. They understood that pride blocks insight, and that only the mind that admits it has more to learn can ever become wise. Marcus Aurelius wrote while he ruled an empire, yet never stopped journaling like a student, reminding himself of what he didn't know, of what he had to improve. Epictetus, though born a slave, taught emperors through the power of insight, not status. Their humility kept their minds open and their wisdom growing. They did not learn to appear wise. They learned to become better humans. To them, learning was a sacred duty, an endless unfolding, not a destination. It wasn't about appearing clever in conversation. It was about cultivating discernment in silence. That mindset is what turns smart into dangerous. A person who never assumes they know enough, but who never forgets what they already know either. A person who sharpens the mind like a blade and polishes the soul like a mirror, ready for whatever life reveals next. ready not just to respond to the world, but to shape it. Set a goal to read one book per month from a different subject. Keep a notebook of lessons. Connect ideas across fields. Try to see how each topic intersects with Stoic thought. Over time, your mental library will make you indispensable. Chapter 5: The Language of Influence. Words are weapons. Words are tools. Words can build empires or end them. They can spark revolutions or resolve feuds. They can liberate minds or chain them. To be dangerously smart is to be fluent in the language of influence, not only knowing what to say, but when to say it, how to say it, and what not to say at all. Words become strategic instruments in the hands of those who master them. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "Waste no more time arguing what a good man should be. Be one." Actions matter more than words, but when words are backed by action, they carry undeniable weight. Speech that reflects truth lived out is magnetic, but speech without grounding is noise. When you can align powerful actions with articulate speech, you become a force. You become the person who gives direction when others only give opinion. You cut through fog, you don't add to it. Understand tone, not just your own, but the emotional undertone of a room. Recognize the emotional temperature before you say a single word. Words do not exist in isolation. They are delivered into an emotional climate that can either carry them or distort them. Learn to sense when someone is agitated, insecure, defensive, or open. Speak into that moment with awareness. Understand timing, when to hold silence and let tension speak for itself. When to drop one sentence that shifts the atmosphere, and when to exit a conversation with grace rather than ego. Timing is more than rhythm, it is wisdom in motion. It is what makes the difference between resonance and rejection. Learn how to persuade, not with pressure, but with clarity. Influence doesn't require shouting, it requires sharpening. Learn how to clarify what others complicate, how to make the tangled simple, how to say what others are afraid to say, and how to diffuse conflict without becoming passive. Clarify without condescension, calm without dismissal, and sharpen your arguments with precision rather than aggression. Precision is power. Aggression is noise. A person who knows how to speak clearly, compellingly, and calmly becomes a beacon in times of confusion. They anchor discussions, they shift moods, they bring logic to storms of emotion. Their words calm panic, settle disputes, and bring vision to uncertainty. They don't just speak, they shape. They sculpt the atmosphere with presence before they ever speak a word. To influence is not to manipulate, it is to elevate conversation. It is to bring dignity into disagreement. It is to reveal what is hidden, not with shame, but with light. It is to untangle what is knotted, not by tearing, but by understanding. It is to guide others to clarity, not by overpowering them, but by helping them see for themselves. Influence that lasts is born from respect, not force. When your words reflect your inner discipline, people listen, because they know your voice isn't reactive. It's rooted, it's not borrowed, it's earned. They trust your judgment not because you demand it, but because you've demonstrated it, over and over, in the way you speak, the way you pause, the way you let silence do its work. And trust is the foundation of influence, not charisma, not cleverness. Trust. Trust that your words are honest. Trust that your intent is clean. Influence isn't won, it is earned. Over time, through consistency, through speech that cuts, not wounds, through wisdom that lands, not lectures that drag, through restraint that speaks louder than ego. This is the language of the dangerously smart, the one who doesn't command with noise but leads with weight. Their voice carries further because it rises from the quiet strength within. Analyze your tone. Ask yourself if it communicates what you truly intend. Is it confident but humble? Is it calm but commanding? Is it rooted in clarity or clouded by emotion? Then examine your pacing. Are you rushing through ideas or are you letting them breathe? The rhythm of your words shapes the experience of your listener. A deliberate pace allows each thought to settle, to land, to resonate. Next, examine your clarity. Are you being precise with your language, or vague and abstract? Do your sentences unfold with purpose, or do they ramble without aim? Practice making your speech more deliberate, more disciplined, more sculpted. Let each sentence serve a function. Let each pause give space for meaning to rise. Speak less, but with more force, not in volume, but in substance. Let each word carry weight. Let it be chosen, not spilled. Let it arrive not as noise, but as presence. The best communicators speak as if their words were blades, sharp, measured, necessary. You don't need many. You only need the right ones, spoken at the right time, in the right way. That is what makes speech powerful. That is what makes you dangerously smart when you speak. Chapter 6. Build the network of the mind. Dangerous intelligence does not exist in isolation. The Stoics knew that one mind, no matter how sharp, becomes sharper through connection. Marcus Aurelius constantly referenced the universe as a single living being, of which we are all parts. To grow, we must engage. To evolve, we must interact. But not all connections elevate you. Some distract, some drain. The dangerously smart person learns to build a mental network, not just of people, but of ideas, integrated, challenging, expanding. To be surrounded by thinkers who sharpen you rather than pacify you is one of the greatest forms of preparation. Conversations should be frictional, refining your assumptions, sharpening your perspective. The dangerously smart person doesn't seek echo chambers. They seek clarity. They seek contradiction to test conviction. They collect minds the way others collect trophies, not for display, but for utility. Because in moments of doubt, a question posed to the right mind can redirect an entire life. The network of the mind extends beyond conversation. It's in the books you read, the thinkers you revisit, the mentors you keep near, even if only through their writings. It's in the practice of building a cathedral of wisdom from many voices, many failures, many victories. Each connection adds another branch to your thinking. Each idea stretches your map of understanding. To be dangerously smart is not to hoard brilliance, but to remain humble enough to seek it in others, to know who to call, who to read, who to consult, and when to remain silent and reflect. Smart people can answer questions, but dangerously smart people know which questions to ask and who to ask them to. They build networks not of influence, but of wisdom. Curate a personal council. Choose five minds, living or dead, whose thinking challenges and refines your own. Rotate through their work. Compare their philosophies. Let them debate in your journal. Then apply what resonates in your daily decisions. Your thinking will mature not in solitude, but in dialogue with greatness. Chapter 7. Control the frame, command the room. He who controls the frame controls the conversation. The Stoics understood this instinctively. They didn't allow others to define the terms of engagement. When insulted, they reframed the insult. When challenged, they redirected the energy. When surrounded by hostility, they chose stillness instead of escalation. They were never trapped in reactive games. They wrote their own rules by refusing to play emotional chess with unstable opponents. Their mastery came not through domination, but through detachment from emotional baiting. They saw every situation not as an event, but as a context, and they controlled that context by mastering perspective. To be dangerously smart is to become a master of framing. It is to define reality before others define it for you. It's knowing how to shift a conversation from emotion to logic, from accusation to question, from conflict to clarity. It's the difference between being drawn into drama and drawing boundaries around truth. You do not win by being louder. You win by being clearer, by asking the question no one else thought to ask, by seeing the invisible thread connecting the chaos and pulling it with quiet confidence, by changing the narrative from what everyone sees to what no one sees. To master framing is to master perception, and perception is the birthplace of power. The dangerously smart person always carries the unseen frame. They enter a room not trying to control others, but to control interpretation. When others are stuck on what happened, they ask, why does it matter? When others fixate on blame, they shift toward responsibility. When a room turns reactive, they remain reflective. They are not easily baited. They recognize conversational traps, loaded questions, false dilemmas, circular reasoning, and dismantle them not with emotion, but with elegance. Their responses aren't loud, but they reverberate. Their questions reshape assumptions. Their silence disrupts manipulation. To control the frame is to control meaning. And when you control meaning, you shape emotion. You direct not only the narrative, but the energy of an interaction. You calm chaos. You bring focus. You redirect the current instead of swimming against it. Like a sculptor shaping stone, you shape perception, not through force, but through intentional placement. You lead the mind of others not by domination, but by suggestion, subtlety, and composure. You set the tone not just for the words spoken, but for how they will be interpreted. You don't just control the facts, you define the lens through which those facts are viewed. It's not about overpowering others, it's about showing a better lens, a lens rooted in clarity, intention, and restraint. You become the filter through which chaos becomes order. The Stoics used this frame control internally first, and that's why it worked externally. They reframed hardship as training, delay as discipline, and pain as purification. They saw every difficulty as a disguised opportunity, every insult as a mirror for reflection. They didn't deny their suffering, they transformed it through meaning. And when you give pain a noble purpose, it can no longer enslave you. They mastered narrative, and that is the root of all influence, because the most powerful person in the room is never the loudest. It is the one who decides what the moment means, the one who gives it shape, significance, and structure, the one who tells the better story and tells it so convincingly that others naturally follow. They don't persuade by overpowering. They persuade by revealing. They show a new path, a new lens, a new angle that reframes confusion into clarity. The one who reframes fear into focus, rejection into redirection, and struggle into refinement becomes the architect of perception. They take what others see as chaos and extract meaning from it. They don't deny hardship, they give it purpose. They don't avoid discomfort. They name it, understand it, and place it in the right context. That act alone changes the emotional temperature of the room. Influence isn't always about what you say. It's about how you shape what is felt, seen, and interpreted. It's the invisible power behind your words, the structure of thought, the command of presence, the intentional silence that surrounds your language. True influence is not loud. It is resonant. It's not about always being right. It's about making sense when others feel lost. It's the tone that calms, the clarity that focuses, the insight that stabilizes. Change the story, and you change the outcome. Shift the perspective, and you reshape the battlefield. Frame the moment, and you shape the future. Direct the meaning, and you reshape the energy of the entire room. You turn reaction into reflection. You replace confusion with direction. This is power that doesn't push, it pulls. This is the quiet authority of those who master the frame, not through intimidation, but through vision, not through manipulation, but through meaning. The dangerously smart don't just speak, they shape the story in which others think. In your next disagreement, don't argue. Reframe. Shift the ground beneath the conflict. Change the context before you change the content. Restate the issue in different terms, terms that clarify, not escalate. Ask yourself, what are we really talking about here? Look for the hidden premise behind their statements. Find the assumption beneath the surface and challenge that, not as an attack, but as an invitation to rethink. Often, people aren't actually clashing over facts. They're clashing over frames. Expose the difference gently. Let your calmness do the talking. Let your questions become tools, not traps. Ask not to corner, but to open. Ask not to win, but to explore. Watch how tone shifts when you choose clarity over control. When others get loud, get quiet. When they rush, slow down. When they get emotional, get exact. Influence doesn't come from being heard first, it comes from being understood best. And people follow the one who makes the most sense, not the most noise. Because sense builds trust, and trust is the foundation of leadership, even in disagreement. Chapter 8. Stay dangerous, stay curious. Curiosity is the mind's fire. Without it, knowledge cools into arrogance and turns rigid. A sharp intellect without curiosity becomes dogmatic, closed off to growth. But with curiosity, that same intellect becomes fluid, dynamic, and endlessly evolving. The Stoics stayed curious about everything: life, death, nature, fate, the gods, their own limitations, and the shifting nature of human desire. They knew that to stop asking questions was to stop expanding. To be dangerously smart is to stay endlessly curious, not recklessly curious, wandering without focus, but deliberately so, with a hunger for insight. To constantly ask, "What don't I see yet?" and "What have I assumed without testing?" is to stay one step ahead of intellectual complacency. Curiosity doesn't weaken conviction, it refines it. Conviction that has never been questioned is nothing more than habit dressed in confidence. But conviction that has survived challenge becomes wisdom, tested and tempered by friction. Curiosity takes beliefs and places them in the fire of testing, to see what holds under pressure, what collapses under scrutiny, and what reveals deeper layers of truth when stripped of ego. It identifies blind spots not to shame us, but to prepare us. It chips away at ego, not to destroy self-worth, but to reveal the core of integrity beneath. The dangerously smart don't just explore new ideas, they interrogate their own assumptions. They do not worship their past insights, they update them. They return to them again and again, like a builder inspecting a bridge under pressure. If a beam is weak, they reinforce it or replace it. If the foundation shifts, they adapt the structure. They do not fear being wrong. They fear standing still. They would rather risk discomfort than stagnate in comfort. They would rather be questioned than become irrelevant. Their principles are strong, not because they are defended by pride, but because they are purified by scrutiny, revised by experience, and resilient to challenge. Curiosity is also protection. It protects you from stagnation, from the silent erosion of insight that comes from never evolving your questions. It protects you from dogma, the rigid walls we build around truth when we stop testing it. It shields you from complacency, which is the death of sharpness. It acts as a barrier between you and intellectual laziness, and a spotlight on areas where you've become too certain. It warns you when your growth has stalled, when your certainty has calcified, when your vision has narrowed. The moment you think you know enough is the moment you start falling behind, because reality is always moving, and knowledge that doesn't evolve becomes outdated. In a world of rapid change, the curious mind will always outlast the stagnant one. The Stoics prized adaptability, a and curiosity is its engine. They were not content to sit on what they believed. They wanted to know if those beliefs still held true under new light, new challenge, new experiences. Curiosity is not just the beginning of wisdom, it is its constant renewal. Without it, the mind hardens. With it, the mind expands. A curious mind is a prepared mind. A prepared mind is a flexible mind. And a flexible mind is a powerful one, capable of adjusting under pressure, evolving with time, and thriving in complexity. It is a mind that cannot be trapped by ideology, frozen by tradition, or manipulated by fear. It is a mind that questions bravely, reflects deeply, and grows endlessly. At the end of each week, write down three things you learned and three things you're still unsure about. Then spend time exploring those questions. Let curiosity be your compass. Let wonder be your fuel. Chapter 9. Fortify the body, sharpen the edge. The Stoics did not separate body from mind. They trained both. Epictetus, once crippled, taught that the body must be disciplined, not worshipped. Marcus Aurelius led armies and still found time to strengthen himself physically and mentally. They knew that physical resilience feeds mental resilience. To be dangerously smart is to not only sharpen the mind, but to steel the body. A sharp sword needs a strong sheath. Discipline in the body reinforces discipline in the mind. When you train the body, you train resolve. You build tolerance for discomfort. You condition yourself to act when tired, to think when pressured, to endure when tested. Strength is not vanity, it is preparation. When the body is strong, the mind does not have to fear physical stress. It can focus, it can lead, it can remain calm because it is not distracted by pain or fatigue. The dangerously smart do not pursue aesthetics, they pursue readiness. You are less likely to be manipulated when your body is under your command. When your physical discipline aligns with your mental clarity, you become a unified force. You carry yourself differently. You breathe more deliberately. You listen with focus. Your presence is not easily shaken because you are not easily fatigued or distracted. A fit body doesn't just project strength, it confirms self-mastery. It reflects hours of commitment, control, and effort, evidence that you are capable of doing what needs to be done, even when it's uncomfortable. A strong body reinforces a strong identity. It tells your mind that you can endure more, that you are not fragile, that you are trained for difficulty. It reduces fear, not because pain disappears, but because you've made peace with it. And that makes you dangerous in the best way. It makes you reliable in crisis, focused under stress, grounded when others unravel. In any situation, the person most in control of themselves is the one most likely to stay calm, think clearly, and act decisively. Self-control at the physical level deepens your composure in high-stakes moments. You don't flinch under pressure. You don't fold when challenged. You've trained your body to serve your mind, and in doing so, you've forged a level of mental toughness few ever touch. It's not about being the strongest in the room. It's about being the most unshakable, the one who can suffer without complaint, who can keep breathing when others panic, who can act without hesitation when timing matters most. That kind of presence can't be faked. It's built, and it starts with the body. Set a non-negotiable physical routine. This is not optional. It's the daily appointment with discipline that cannot be rescheduled, cannot be negotiated, and cannot be delayed. It doesn't have to be extreme. You don't need to run marathons or lift record-breaking weights. But it has to be consistent. It must demand effort. It must stretch your limits. It must meet you where you are, then challenge you to go further. Train every day, not just for muscle, but for mind. Use every push-up, every rep, every mile as a lesson in mental endurance. Let the physical practice be a metaphor for internal strength. Use your workouts to practice willpower. Not only the will to begin, but the will to continue. To push one more time when your mind says, stop. Make discomfort your ally. Let it teach you about resilience. Let it sharpen your edge. Make sweat a ritual, pain a teacher, and effort a friend. Let pain become part of your training, not your enemy. Pain is not a punishment, it is a test. It's the echo of growth, the sharpening stone for the blade of your will. Embrace it, and your body will respond, your mind will rise, and your spirit will become unshakable. Chapter 10. Master yourself, no one can touch you. This is the final form of dangerous intelligence, self-mastery. When you are in command of your thoughts, your speech, your habits, your body, your time, there is nothing left for the world to manipulate. When you master yourself, you walk with quiet power. You are not dependent on approval, immune to flattery, resistant to insult. You have become what the Stoics envisioned, a fortress within the storm. People wonder how to be powerful. The Stoics showed it through example. They reminded us that real power is internal. It's the ability to choose your response no matter the circumstance. It's to be deeply principled, fiercely calm, and relentlessly prepared. A person who walks like this cannot be underestimated because they never underestimate themselves. To master yourself is not to become cold. It is to become clear. It is to respond with purpose instead of impulse. It is to speak when it matters, act when it counts, and observe without fear. Self-mastery is the last level. It is the art of being ungovernable, not through rebellion, but through inner order. You do not need to dominate others. You dominate yourself. That is enough. Review your daily habits. Where do you leak power? Where do you act on impulse, waste time, or speak without thinking? Pick one of those and correct it every day. One change at a time. The road to mastery is paved with small, consistent victories.